Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Ah, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Billy the Brain, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ AM 1400, or we stream over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people have to say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. If all of this sounds like National Public Radio, well, then you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right, with the emphasis on the right. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. For those of you out of state, that's area code 805-639-0008. And I have to give a big shout out to all of my listeners. I was doing some reports last night and took a look via the internet. We have had listeners in 37 states plus the District of Columbia in the month of July alone. So thank you, and a big shout out to all of my listeners. As you all know, if you're a regular listener, each show has a theme, and today's theme is Ethereal Thursday. I have two guests who have researched the afterlife and have come to some remarkable conclusions. The desire for afterlife is universal. It crosses all faiths. It crosses history, too. My first guest has written the definitive book on heaven and humanity's shared perception of an afterlife. She draws on all world religions to reach her conclusions. Lisa Miller is the senior editor at Newsweek magazine. She oversees all of the magazine's religious coverage. She writes the weekly Brief Belief Watch column. She also helped launch Washington Post's On Faith, an online global conversation about religion and faith. She edited Newsweek's Spirituality in America double issue, which looked at the rise of spirituality and why many Americans are choosing to seek spiritual experiences outside of traditional religions. She has a long tradition in journalism. I won't go into all of that because I want to spend most of our time talking about the book. She's a graduate of Oberlin College with a BA in English, and I won't even give the year in deference to her. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's great to have you on board. And just let me say right off the bat, this was a fantastic read. It's not a subject that Billy the Brain, being an atheist, would have necessarily picked up. But once I got into it, your book is titled Heaven, Our Enduring Fascination with the Afterlife. It was a fascinating read, so I appreciate the work that you put into this.
I'm so glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, let's get right to it, shall we? 80% of Americans say that they believe in heaven. And the remarkable thing to me, that's a 10% increase from just a decade ago. But if you talk to anybody on the street, I mean, I talked to my wife, I asked her to describe what's heaven going to be like. You get images of angels floating around, playing harps on clouds, the pearly gates. Not too compelling to me. You know, it's kind of a kumbaya holiday camp as far as that goes. What is our modern vision of heaven?
Right now we have a kind of do-it-yourself heaven. Heaven has devolved, I would say, into a kind of culmination of our greatest individual desires. So if you're somebody who likes a spa, then heaven is like a spa. And if you're a person who likes walks in nature, then heaven is walks in nature. And if you're a person who likes to play the saxophone and eat bonbons, then that's what heaven is for you. And the problem with that is that throughout history, heaven has been a community thing. So, you know, you get to heaven because your community of believers believes in a certain thing, and you go there together and you get to see God. And these days, it's a kind of individual Disneyland, a realization of your greatest desire.
Sort of like a holiday camp, exactly. But but isn't that just a reflection of the me generation? I mean, most of us are now baby boomers. We've come of age, and we've always believed in individual rights. Doesn't it make sense that heaven would evolve to the me generation?
It absolutely does. The problem for me is that heaven loses its seriousness then. And I think heaven is a very serious idea. I mean, it offers consolation to families who are grieving. I think it's been central to Western theology from the very beginning. And if it is, as you say, a sort of holiday camp, a kumbaya holiday camp, then what does it mean, really? And in my book, I hope to provoke readers to think about what they really believe about heaven, because for me, kumbaya holiday camp isn't as important as a place where you go to be with God and connect with God forever and ever.
All right, I can buy that. But you say that it is devolved, the whole idea of heaven is devolved from a community thing. And mm-hmm. I want to go back to that, because historically, yes, heaven has always been about a community. Quakers go to Quaker heaven, Catholics go to Catholic heavens, Jews go to Jews heaven. But that vision of heaven is rather exclusive, isn't it? I mean, you're locking out all of the other religions, all of the other people, despite how good they may have been. So weren't there flaws in the old way of having a community?
There are absolutely flaws in every way of looking at it. You know, the question of who gets to go to heaven, which is one of the chapters in my book, it's a question about salvation, is one of these questions that really torments believers and non-believers alike. Does one religion have the, you know, has one religion cornered the market on heaven? In other words, if you're a Mormon, you get to heaven or the highest level of heaven, and if you're not, you don't get to go there. If you're a Jew, you get to the highest level of heaven, and if you're not, you don't get to go there. Or is heaven actually a reward for good behavior on earth and leaving aside, you know, theological differences? There's an old saying, God doesn't really care about religion. There are many, many people in America who believe that good people go to heaven and that there are many paths to God and that you don't have to be believe in the creeds of a certain religion to get there.
Okay. I mean, there are many paths to God. That's also a Hindu belief as well. But you bring up an interesting point. Heaven, religion is a man-made concept. So I'm going to throw this out at you. But before I do, we're talking to Lisa Miller, everybody, author of the book Heaven. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008, 639-0008. And this is what I want to throw it at you. Ludwig Feuerbach wrote, "Man created God in his own image," although that's often been attributed to Voltaire. Is it possible that man created heaven and we all have this shared delusion about the afterlife?
Yeah, it's possible. It's also possible that heaven is something that happens, and there's a little section about this in the book, happens in your brain when you die. So these images that we hear about heaven are actually your brain chemicals firing, and in the end, there's nothing. I don't claim to know anything empirically real about heaven, whether heaven really exists or not. The book is an exploration of beliefs about heaven. You know, there are people who say they've been to heaven in near-death experiences and come back. There are all kinds of accounts of heaven. Visionaries say they've been to heaven or they've seen glimpses of heaven. There are people who think that it's all completely a creation of the human mind. I don't claim to know the answer there.
Okay, and I'm not asking you to. I'm just throwing these ideas out for conversation.
They're very interesting ideas.
But I've got to ask you then, all right, what of all of the heavens that you have researched for this book, all of the different visions of heaven, what is the most compelling for you?
For me, I approached this book as a sort of agnostic, a hopeful agnostic. In other words, I understand the yearning for heaven. I sympathize with the yearning for heaven. I am by nature a skeptic. My father is a scientist. I'm a journalist. We don't tend to be credulous people. And yet, I was very moved by some of the visions of heaven that I encountered. One of them is this idea that the kingdom of God is among us. This is something that Christians say to each other a lot. You know, the kingdom of God is here. And that heaven is in the kindness that we have for each other, the love we have for each other, our work to make beauty or perfection or justice. In other words, heaven is perfection, and our efforts to recreate perfection here on earth, in those efforts we find heaven. So that's one idea of heaven I like a lot. And then another idea came out of a conversation I had with an Orthodox Jewish scholar at Harvard, who said that heaven was a radical act of grace and kindness on God's part. In other words, it's a gift from God. It's supernatural. It doesn't do us any good to try to explain the whys and wherefores, because God's doing it and God is mysterious and supernatural. And we have to open ourselves to the possibility that, you know, God can do supernatural things. That is something that I have a little bit of a harder time with, and yet I like opening the door a crack to that.
Sure. It really moves you into the realm of faith. You have to be faithful. You have to believe in order to believe that. We're talking to Lisa Miller, author of the book Heaven. And Lisa, you've studied this from different world religions. You've also studied this over time as well. So I'd like you to help clarify, because in my mind, you know, the ancient Egyptians, way back thousands and thousands of years ago, they prepared mummies for the afterlife. So they clearly believed in an afterlife. The Norse had Valhalla. People would go to Valhalla afterwards. How has the whole concept of religion changed over time from those earlier views of heaven?
Right. As you say, humans have always had some idea of the afterlife, or else Neanderthals would not have buried their dead with seeds and flowers and weapons sometimes. They must have thought their dead needed stuff in the world to come. What's different in the Western tradition, my book only focuses on Islam, Judaism, and Christianity, is that heaven becomes a reward for righteous behavior on earth, and the result is eternal living with God. So what you do here matters to God. And if you do the right thing, and here there's a ton of debate about what that means, you will be rewarded with an everlasting home with God. That is a Jewish idea that came into being almost like the Big Bang, sort of all of a sudden, about 200 years before the birth of Christ. And since then, Western religion has taken that idea and embroidered it and filled it out and debated it and argued over it. But that's different from certain heroes getting to heaven, certain royals getting to heaven, and it's certainly different from living sort of underground in this shady world afterlife forever and ever.
Gotcha. We're talking to Lisa Miller, everybody, author of the book Heaven. And Lisa, we're going to have to take a break here, but I want to pose a question to you. Don't answer it now. We want you to answer it when you come back. And my question is this. Some people quip that your book, Heaven, is unnecessary, that there's already a definitive work on heaven, and it's given out free by the Gideons. It's called the Bible. So what does the Bible actually say about heaven? Don't answer that now, but when we come back, I'd like you to answer that, please.
Okay.
And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What? Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Billy the Brain. You're listening to Brainstorming, and it is Ethereal Thursday here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. My very special guest in the first segment is Lisa Miller. She is the author of the book Heaven. She is also a journalist for Newsweek magazine, and she has written a fantastic book looking at heaven from across world religions, across time. And before we went to break, Lisa, I asked you a question. There's already a pretty good book out there on heaven. It's called The Bible. What exactly does the Bible say about heaven?
Well, it depends on what part of the Bible you read. But in the book of Revelation, which is the last book of the Bible, it has all of the images that we in contemporary culture imagine heaven to be like. It has the streets of gold. It has the jeweled gates. It has the angel sitting by the throne singing, holy, holy, holy. It has the throne of God and Jesus sitting on the right hand of God. It has a garden. It has, trees with many fruits. So these are the classical images of heaven that have come down to us through history, and they are all in the book of Revelation.
Interesting. Well, we do something with our guests that I call the quick fire, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you to play along with us. I'm just going to give you certain religions, and I'm going to ask you knee-jerk reaction of what their visions of heaven are based on your research. So first of all, Catholicism.
Catholicism is a very communitarian heaven. In other words, all the saints are there, Mary is there, Jesus is there. In Dante's heaven, which is a Catholic heaven, you see people from history, you see the biblical patriarchs, you're there. It's a society. It's a heavenly society with, your family, the saints, the patriarchs, the people from the Bible, Jesus, God, Mary. It's a very populated heaven. And everybody is looking at God.
Okay. Well, now, the Catholics also hedged their bets, though. They created this thing called purgatory. And how does that figure into your version or their version of heaven?
Right. It's not actually a hedge. It's a process. It's, purgatory is the place you have to go first before you go to heaven, and it's a kind of cleansing process. So in medieval times, it was thought of to be sort of like hell, and the only difference between hell and purgatory was that you don't stay in purgatory, you get to go to heaven. By the time you're done with your time in purgatory, your soul is cleansed and ready for heaven. Some people have to go to purgatory for a long time. Some people don't need to go to purgatory at all. Martyrs, for example, don't have to go to purgatory. But the good news is that once you're in heaven, your sense of time is completely collapsed, so you don't remember your time in purgatory, and the pain that was inflicted upon you in purgatory doesn't, you know, exist anymore.
Okay, good. What about Judaism?
Judaism is very difficult to talk about in terms of heaven. Jews always say it's this world that matters and not the next world. And at the same time, Jews, especially Orthodox Jews, do have a vision of the end of the world and a renewed earth and living with God forever and ever. And one of the most popular conventional visions of heaven among the Orthodox is heaven as a Torah study class, where you study the Bible and, you know, the works associated with the Bible over and over and over again. And this has become something of a joke among the Orthodox, you know. Is heaven just like yeshiva, except without any recess?
Exactly. Okay. Well, you said something earlier which I thought was fascinating, and the whole concept, you said the whole concept of heaven is really a Jewish concept.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of, you know, connecting your righteous behavior to your place in the sky with God forever and ever is a Jewish idea. And in the Middle Ages especially, there were Jewish mystics who imagined heaven. There was all of this talk about levels of heaven, you know, which level would you ascend to, and that depended on your goodness and your wisdom and your knowledge. So there's this very important sense of your actions on earth being connected to your destiny forever and ever. But Jews don't tend to, especially modern Jews, don't tend to embroider heaven, populate it, personalize it, anthropomorphize it the way that Christians and Muslims do.
All right. Let me ask you about Protestantism and their view of heaven.
Protestantism, you know, famously, Luther and Calvin took the pictures of the saints and Mary and Jesus in heaven down off the church walls in Europe. Protestantism offers a very austere heaven, so it's not about the people there, and it's not about, you know, saints and patriarchs and cities and gardens. It's about a communion with God, an individual communion with God. And so, especially, you know, right after the Reformation, the heaven that the Protestants offered was this very sort of ascetic, almost empty place, because the Reformers felt that the Catholic heaven had sort of trivialized the idea of salvation. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to emphasize this, you know, connecting with God, this transcendent individual connecting with God. But of course, humans don't like that, because that seems kind of not very comforting, not very cozy when you're in the throes of grief when somebody you love has died.
Exactly.
So in the middle of the 19th century, the Protestant churches, especially in America, came up with all of these much more sort of intimate visions of heaven around the time of the Civil War, where, you know, you could see your loved ones, you could have family reunions, you could smell the grass, you could see the sun shining, you could, you know, feel the wind on your cheek. It became much more domesticated again.
Okay. We're talking to Lisa Miller, everybody, author of the book Heaven, also the religion writer for Newsweek magazine. Last one on my list, a quick fire, is Islam.
Yeah. One of the things that I always say about Islam is that it really shows you that heaven is the culmination of a community's or greatest desires, because Islam was founded in the 7th century on the Arabian Peninsula, where, you know, there was nothing. It was completely arid. There was very little water. Food spoiled because it was 120 degrees every day. The people, the Bedouins who lived on the peninsula, had a very hard life. They killed each other. They often killed their own children because there wasn't enough food to eat. Mm. There's a stricture in the Quran about not killing baby girls simply because you can't figure out how to feed them. So this was obviously something that those people sometimes had to do. Mm. And the heaven that Islam offers in the Quran is this abundantly fertile fountains, rivers, food never spoils, which I think is an important point. People are relaxing on couches, wearing silk clothes, and there are waiters standing around with cool goblets of things to drink. Wine doesn't make you drunk. There's water. You wear gold bracelets, and everybody says to each other, Salam, which means peace.
Peace. Mm-hmm.
Seems to me like the most beautiful realization of a world that doesn't exist on Earth.
And that's why I saved
particular people.
And that's why I saved it for last, Lisa, because it leads me into my next question, which is, Islam and the Quran had this beautiful vision of heaven, which was so contrary to what their day-to-day life was. Any civilization really creates a vision of heaven that's based in part, at least, on what they don't have. So over time, you know, things will change because you get more affluent and everything else. As we are the most affluent society that history has ever seen, how has that impacted everybody's current view of heaven? And is, in fact, heaven a situational vision?
Right. Well, what's different about now is that heaven is more of what we do have. You know, life on Earth is so good in modern America. Even, you know, our current economic woes and war notwithstanding, our visions of heaven look very much like our lives on Earth. You know, if you think about the movie The Lovely Bones or the book The Lovely Bones, which was so popular, mm-hmm. That heaven is, you know, a high school and there's, you know, it's a 15-year-old girl, and there are puppies, and there's ice cream, and a best friend, and it just looks like regular Earth, but more. One really interesting development is that more and more people believe in reincarnation, and when I asked religion scholars about this, they say, well, that makes total sense, because life is so good on Earth, you don't want to go someplace else, you want to come back here again and do it again.
There you go. I like that. We're talking to Lisa Miller, everybody, author of the book Heaven, Our Enduring Fascination with the Afterlife. And Lisa, I've got to ask you, is heaven boring? I mean, as humans, we're constantly growing. We're constantly changing. The idea of being changeless in heaven and just kind of drifting on and on for eternity seems to go against our own human nature.
Right. Well, that gets us back to the question, is God in heaven? Because what religious believers would say is, if God is there and if we're connected with God, then that can't be boring. Because I thought the same thing you did, you know, this repetitive singing, this repetitive praying, the sort of floating around on clouds and flapping your angel wings, that does seem kind of boring when our life on Earth is so exciting, when we can do anything we want. But then if you put God back into the picture and you believe in a supernatural God, then a connection with that has got to be the opposite of boring.
Okay, that makes sense. We're talking to Lisa Miller, everybody, author of the book Heaven. And I want to lay this one on you as our last question,
okay,
as we're running out of time here, Lisa. But in your view, which is a more accurate description of heaven? Kind of a soothing blanket to put on the brow of the bereaved? Or is it a tool for control and intimidation?
Well, here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say both and. What I always say about religion is that it is completely doesn't – people believe – opposite things a lot. And so, you know, your rabbi can be telling you that you shouldn't worship idols, and you can be saying, yeah, that's fine, I'm not going to worship idols, and then you can be talking to your dead ancestors in your kitchen, you know, after you come home from synagogue. So I think you can both use heaven as an idea for consolation, and I think it's a great consolation and inspiration to people who've lost dear ones, and very useful in that way. And I think at its very worst, it can motivate people to, you know, blow themselves up. And you have to take it for what it is, which is both. And you can't have one without the other.
And we're going to have to leave it there. Lisa Miller, author of the book Heaven, Our Enduring Fascination with the Afterlife. If you missed any part of this interview, this will be up on our new website, brainstormingonline.com. You can catch the entire interview there. Lisa, you're a delightful guest. Thank you so much for being part
so
of Brainstorming.
Thanks so much.
Talk to you later.